Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today. Race Tools Direct is going to be exhibiting at the PRI show December 12th through 14th. Be sure to stop by booth 7088 near the coat check to say hi and check out our products on display.
So this week we have the NHRA Finals winner in Superstock, Jeff Donna.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Enjoy your show.
No problem, man. Thanks for coming on.
That's all. Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, well, thanks for jumping on here. Well, let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about a few of the hot topics that are kind of going on within the sport and within, you know, stock Superstock, but also within drag racing in general. It seemed like the Western swing was a little bit more going on than normal, kind of within the sport, and definitely got some good exposure. So let's jump right into some of the stuff.
Yeah, it brought out the best in people, you know, right off the bat. We had a fine in Dallas. Was it Mike Braswell? $1,500. Somebody was using a rental car and supposedly did a sharp U-turn, from what I understand. And there was a security guard there. There was some, you know, some kind of a heated exchange. And next thing you know, on Monday, it was a $1,500 fine. And they said it was doing donuts, which from about 10 racers that I would say are pretty respectable, they said that that was not the case and that the crime did not fit the punishment there. You know, they said there was nobody out and about that night. I know, Jeff, you witnessed that or around when that happened or not with, I don't know, I think it was a crew guy was driving the car.
No, that's the first really having it explained to me. That's the first time I've really heard about what actually happened. You know, I read about it out there in Vegas, but didn't really hear anything in the pit area about it. It's kind of hush-hush, I guess.
Now, Charlie, was it Mike's rental car or was it just his sticker?
I believe it was just his sticker. He's got a motorhome. He stays in his motorhome most of the time.
Yeah. I wonder if most of the fine is because he gave the sticker to the wrong guy or, you know, something like that.
See, I don't know how that works. The way I interpreted that rule is you could have one vehicle, it didn't matter if it was yours or not, that could leave or enter the property. So with his motorhome being at the facility and not leaving, I think he could give it to anybody. He could give it to a fan. He could give it to another racer, you know, rent a car. I mean, I don't think it matters who he would give it to at that point. It's still his pass. Yeah. I guess he would be responsible, which is why the fine went to him and not the person driving the car. But from what everybody tells me, you know, the fine definitely did not fit the punishment of the event.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems like a lot of that, the way that goes down is it usually doesn't fit the crime.
Yeah. I mean, I was told that it looked like just a, you know, an easy little money grab at the end of the year for NHRA.
Sure.
So.
Now, I will say they seem to be cracking down a little bit more on some of those past things. And a good example I'll give is I was at Charlotte this year, and I have some good friends that I grew up with that now live in the Charlotte area. And they came over to the race on Saturday afternoon and wanted to hang out a little bit. And I went over to get their ticket made into like a restricted pass, you know, get them added to my thing so I could take them up the starting line and stuff. And, you know, they'd kind of get the full experience. Never really been to a racetrack. And the lady made me show her proof that I had won first round.
Wow.
And I said, why does it matter? And she said, well, if you lose first round, you can't add them to your restricted area pass, which I guess I'd never really thought of. I don't know if I ever tried to do that before, but I thought that was kind of strange. And that they were that, you know, strict about it. And it was on a Saturday. It was like Saturday at 10 o'clock. It wasn't even,
You know. Yeah, I mean, hard to believe NHRA would take the fun out of it for the sportsman racer. I mean, that's a big shock, Aaron.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's probably going back to the liability issue of, you know, trying to control the pit area better. I mean, as far as who's up on the starting lines and who is driving cars around, you know, with pit passes on them or pit vehicles, it's, you know, what we pay for insurance now is obviously pretty high, so there's a lot of risk involved, I guess, is what the insurance companies are thinking. So NHRA is going to, you know, keep a hold of it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Jim. They're going to keep a hold of it where they can, and that's kind of us sportsman racers. You know, they can keep their thumb on us pretty good. I mean,
right.
You go up there and you can have, you know, you can go up there with your super stocker and have, you know, your wife and one other crew guy, but, you know, let's say, you know, Schumacher can go up there and they can have, you know, an entourage of 47 people and three golf carts, you know, with a funny car. I mean, I don't know how that's safe, but, I mean, so.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where, well, you know, we'll do it this way for these guys, but, yeah, sorry about you guys, even though you're, you know, paying the bills.
Mm-hmm. So, and we are paying the bills.
You know, oh, definitely. I mean, you know, I've said it many times. I mean, look at these national events. The sportsman racers pay, you know, there's about $30,000 to $40,000 collected, you know, from each guy that enters just for the insurance money. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a hell of a policy last time I checked for 3 to 4 days of racing.
That's one of the reasons I didn't return to Norwalk and right after Indy. You know, we weren't getting our insurance money back. The pros weren't there. I kind of thought to myself, you know, I'm not doing it.
God, and I agree, and you weren't the only one that was that thinking, you know, along those lines also. A lot of us that did end up going back to that race, you know, while, yes, it was great, you know, they could go through and ran through the event relatively quickly, you know, the 150 to 170 guys that stayed back, it's like, you know, we paid our $320 now for a national event?
Yeah,
with
something
the insurance
like that.
Money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, did we get, you know, no one got that $110 or whatever is credited back. So,
right.
You know, it's just, yeah, you guys are going to pay this bill and, you know, you don't even get to watch the pros.
Exactly.
You know, so,
yeah.
I don't know. That whole deal was just, you know,
yeah,
it was really screwy.
It's done, but.
Correct. You know,
yeah,
so.
I didn't care for how they rescheduled it and, you know, trying to bring us back in the middle of the week right after Bowling Green Indy. It didn't work for me, you know.
Correct, yeah, and I agree. You know, it didn't work for a lot of guys.
Yep.
All right, well, let's jump on to the next deal here. What did you guys think of the pro stock drama that kind of unfolded where Greg Anderson tried to, you know, qualify on the ladder so that he would line up with Eric Enders first round to give his teammates, Jason Lyon and Bo Buttner, a chance to win the championship?
Well, my opinion of it is they're out there trying to win a championship, and their job, that's their goal, you know, day one. And, you know, if that's their only shot at the end of the year to win a championship, you've got to do that. I mean, you've got to – I would rather put it in my hands than somebody else's hands to do it, you know, and I believe you and I, we raced for a championship, Aaron, can't remember what year it was, a few years back in St. Louis, and we ended up on each other first round, and I was like, you know, I would rather have it this way. You ended up beating me, you got the best of me that day, but I'd rather have it in my hands than somebody else's hands. So, to me, I didn't see no wrong in it.
Correct, and I think most of the racers, most of the fans, I would say, you know, agree with that. I mean, you know, that team, KB, you know, Anderson, Lyon, Bo, you know, Kudra, you know, that's what those guys are there for. They're, you know, Jason
right.
and Bo had a shot to win a championship. Greg didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
He's out there, you know, clutching it at 1,100 feet or 1,000 feet or whatever, you know, in the first couple hits, running the risk of not qualifying. I mean, that's the other thing you got to look at, too, is it wasn't just
yeah.
trying to get your heads up. I mean, he runs the risk. Let's throw this scenario out there. He's clutching it in that last, let's say he makes that last pass. Let's say everybody picks up and he realized, okay, we got to pick up to get in the show. And let's say the thing shakes the tires, you know, 30 foot out.
Sure.
You know,
it was risky.
Now
I was standing
on the
finish line.
Now he's on the outside looking in.
We were all standing on the finish line when all that was going on, you know, Q4. And a few guys on the bottom that were actually on the outside, I think, looking in, snuck in at the bottom, and we're all standing like, wow, you know, this could happen. You know, he could get knocked out, you know, and then have to, you know, maybe run into the stripe or something. So it was pretty cool, really. I enjoyed watching it.
I was a little, you know, I've met Freeman and Erica, and nothing against them. I thought it was a little BS on their part, you know, kind of acting the way they were, you know, this is professional racing and this and that. I mean, you know, I've watched these guys, you know, whether it's Comp Eliminator or Stock and Super Stock or Superclass Racing or Bracket Racing, you know, there's blockers all over the place. I mean,
sure.
We've seen guys come and, you know, hey, you know, run out west with me in block for me. I got a chance to win the world title or, you know, this or that. I mean, it happens at every level. So, you know, why is this unacceptable? That was kind of – and that's a good team over there. And, I mean, you know, Erica did her job. She went out there and was, you know, 15 on the tree, out running by a little bit. And
right.
I just think if she would have just – you know, they wouldn't have said nothing, been like, you know, okay, guys, bring it, you know, and they would have gone out and did this, I think it would have been – way better for them in the end. I mean, she did end up winning the championship and beating Greg, but, you know, kind of that, you know, almost pouting deal for, you know, basically 2 days about, you know, this is BS or this and that. You know, I just, it's not for me, you know, I mean.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you on that for sure. There's, you know, no use pouting about it. There's no use crying about it. Just go out there and run your race, you know. If that's the way they want to run it, let's go. Line them up.
Correct. I mean, and,
you know,
and they, she did.
They've got
plenty
of power. They've got nothing to be scared of. I mean, they're the best team out there right now.
And that was the other thing that kind of really threw me for a loop is right now the last six races, they've kind of been the dominant team, right? I mean, they've been running a little bit quicker here and there. And, you know, if I would have been free and I'd been like, you know what, guys? Bring it, man. I mean, you know, he could have made a statement. Said, well, that doesn't surprise me. We got the power. You know, they're grabbing at straws. You know, it's kind of a last-ditch effort. I mean, that's the way I would have thought that those guys would have attacked it instead of the way that they did, you know. And I know it got heated in a couple pit areas, you know, on Friday or Saturday, and that went down, you know, according to a couple people that were there. And they said it was really just, you know, kind of really unsportsman on their part. So.
Yeah.
Well, I usually try to argue against you, Charlie, and just to give another perspective, but I think you guys are spot on. I think – I thought I was really surprised the way they reacted, and you know, I think, you know, it'd be different if she didn't have a dominant car, but they've been pretty dominant the last six races, like you guys said, and you know, it was a great race first round. I mean, Greg put up a great fight, put up a good light, and ran I think within a hundredth of her, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, good race.
Yeah, it was a real good race.
So, yeah, and, you know, as for the other points championship, I mean, I'm kind of always of the same mind. I'd rather it be in my control of who I win and who I beat. And sometimes I've done that before and lost, but, you know, that's my fault. It's not, you know, me staying on the sideline watching somebody else race. So, I don't know. I'd rather be in control of my own destiny. So I think that's kind of what happened there, and she showed that she was the better racer, had a better light, ran the number, and could have done without the drama, though. So, thought it was interesting.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so the other non-stock, super stock related drama that I have to bring up is the Steve Torrence, Cam Farrar fight at the top end. I don't know if you caught any of this.
I believe bitch slap is probably a better terminology than fight.
Well, yeah, and Cam obviously didn't even have time to fight him back, and got pulled away before he could. So, yeah, fight's probably not the right word. I'm pretty good friends with Cam. I actually talked to him this week about it. I was just really surprised. I mean, you got a guy, Steve Torrence, that's been absolutely dominant all year in Top Fuel. I don't follow Top Fuel super close, but it seemed like almost every national dragster that I got, he was on the cover of. So he dominated all year, you know, running a team that's, you know, just trying to get the qualifying money and come out there and run. I mean, he won the race. If he loses that round, I can see how he's upset. But, I mean, he won the round, still pretty easy. You know, nothing went wrong. He still got a really good chance to win the championship like, how can he even be mad? I just don't understand that. But well, I think the crazier, let me just say this, the crazier thing about it is, you know, he made that bad decision, and we obviously seen what the fallout is, but the fallout's been crazy. I couldn't have imagined how many people would be against him now. But if you look on social media, like, everything, he's posted, like, pictures of with his trophies and pictures at the awards banquet and stuff on the various social media platforms. And, like, I looked at some of the comments, and every single comment's like, you're a bad sportsman. You don't deserve to win. I can't believe you did. Like, somebody said on Sunday alone he lost, like, 6,000 Instagram followers. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it was all over the starting line incident. I guess he was trying to deep stage on him is what happened, and that's what upset him. Is that?
Well, I think it was not so much he was trying to deep stage. I think Cam was really just trying to make him stage first.
Mm-hmm. I don't see how you can be mad about that. I mean, that guy is there for his team and for his sponsor to win a round. I mean, he's just not up there to be a lame duck. You know, he's trying to win. So, in my eyes, he did no wrong. Torrance can be mad all he wants. Now, should he go over there and shove the guy in the face? No. You could have a heated discussion with him. That's fine. You know, and they want to throw blows later, whatever. But, you know, to me, he did no wrong. Steve Torrance, to me, was in the wrong there.
Oh, I think everybody totally agrees to that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, we've got auto start, we've got all this and that, and in the pro classes, you can deep stage. You know, unlike in the sport, you can't deep stage anymore, can you still?
No.
Any of the sportsman classes?
Nope.
I knew it's not a super stock, you couldn't, but I didn't know about the other ones. So here's a guy that is, you know, he's a, you know, under budget team, kind of a David versus Goliath. You know, he's trying to make money, maybe get a sponsor for next year. He goes out there and throws everything he has at it, which should be everybody's goal when you go up there to run somebody, especially whether you're, you know, the underdog or the guy that's got the power.
Exactly.
You know, Steve comes out, you know, he's mad about this or that, you know, and hauls off and basically bitch slaps him. I mean, the really crazy thing about this to me is the fact that you go back, and we've had some incidents in the sportsman pits, you know, with guys coming in hot off the return road after they get beat, and you know, mm-hmm. This is going back years ago, guys sliding cars into their pits, you know, on a dirt, you know, pit spot. We had an incident, I think it was last year, at a points meet at Numidia or one of them in Division One, where there's a stock racer. You know, they cut each other off on the return road, maybe the track. They got out, had a heated exchange, and a helmet was thrown at the other guy's car. And this guy was escorted off the property, given a 6-month ban, and as far as I had heard, he never even touched the other racer, never assaulted him. I mean, Steve Torrance assaulted this guy.
Yeah.
He slapped him on TV. I mean, we've got John Force here. He wins 150 races. I mean, the happiest guy in the world, and he drops the F-bomb totally on accident. I mean, he's one of the best things for our sports. And what do? They fine him and make a big deal about this, right? Because John Force dropped the F-bomb after the guy finally got this win after, you know, health issues and this and that, finally reached that milestone. Here you got Steve Torrance slaps a guy in the face or punch, whatever you want to call it, physically assaults him. And we haven't had anything yet. I mean, it's been a week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, no loss of points, no fines. I mean, Tex Miller was given a 6-month or a year suspension in a $2,000 fine, and there wasn't even an assault.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
if this would have happened mid-year or 3 or 4 races ago, I think you would have seen NHRA do something pretty quick. But with championship on the line, I think they just did nothing. I mean, they dropped the ball.
But that's amazing to me. I mean, here, how can you set that precedence?
Right.
I mean, you had a guy physically assault another racer, one of your customers. I mean, you're the guy in charge. You cannot have racers going out there and slapping each other in the face after a guy, you know, because he doesn't stage the way you want him to stage.
Right.
And nothing happens, not a loss of points. I mean, should he have, you know, not got any points for that race? you know, I don't know. Should he have been DQ'd for assaulting the guy after the race? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe it's a good start. I mean, yeah. You know, should Doug Coletta be the championship, you know, guy by default? I don't know. I mean, are all questions that these guys making $500,000 or more a year should have to make. But instead, you know, well, we're just going to have a party on Tuesday, man. Everybody dress up. And, you know, it's business as usual.
Right.
I mean, it's asinine. I mean, everybody pays all this money, you know, for the Almighty to, you know, take control and this and that. And at the end of the day, nothing. Not, hey, you're going to sit out the first three races of next year, or, you know, we're going to fine you $50,000, or, you know, the cops, you know. What if Cam would have called the police and they would have hauled him off? I mean, that's something that could have happened.
That's something,
you know,
that could have happened.
If he
right.
If he wanted to be a giant dick about it, he could have done that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and had every right to.
First offense, you know, first time he did it, I don't think points is fair. I think a fine is justified, though, definitely justified. But at this point, I mean, they've let it go a week now, so what are they going to do?
But, I mean, yeah. how do you take a stock eliminator driver and suspend him for a half a season with a fine?
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, within, like, 3 days of this incident, this was on, you know, NHRAracer.com, 3-4 days. You know, I mean, that race was, what day was that race over? Sunday?
Sunday, yeah.
I mean, we're now 5 days out, and, I mean.
They did put a statement out.
Oh, okay. What's it saying?
I'm
sure it's real informative.
No, it's not, actually.
Oh, hard to believe.
I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase, but it basically said, we're taking this under review, we take it serious, and we're going to take our time to make an announcement. So it was a no statement, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a sorry, not sorry statement.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's obviously created a stir and created some excitement for the sport that we all love. But I don't know. Not the excitement that I want to see.
I don't think it's the excitement you want to see. I mean, if you've got, you know, 13, 14-year-old kids that are junior dragster kids, I mean, what happens now? You get these junior dragster kids. Well, you know, Steve Torrance, you know, he got mad the way this guy staged at me. So, you know, now when I'm at the junior drag racing league, we're going to have these, you know, kids getting out and slapping each other because they don't like the way the other kid stages or, you know, drops him at the finish line on his head or something. I mean,
great,
that's the
great
precedent
point.
We're setting here right now, you know.
Great point. I agree.
Yeah, I always thought that the fighting after the race was more of a roundy-round thing, but –
I was going to bring that up, but I just left it for you guys.
Yeah,
I mean, that was always a dirt track Saturday night deal. You know?
Sure.
Of course, I don't know. In today's society, I mean, the same week, one of my Cleveland Browns here took the other quarterback's helmet off and hit him in the head with it. So I can't condone that either, but crazy world we live in. So, okay, so I just want to get you guys' take on that. Let's move on and try to talk a little bit about Stock Super Stock since we're already 20 minutes in here, but no, it's all good stuff. Down to 8 cars, I believe, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Rizzoli was still in stock and super stock. I think he was still doubled at the time, right?
Yep.
And if Kyle wins Pomona, wins the world finals, he is world champ, right? I mean, I think he could barely go around.
Ben Rod, Vic.
Around Vic for the championship. So if he wins the race, he's world champ. And I think there were 7 cars left, actually. There was one guy ahead of by. And from what I was reading on Facebook, and I wasn't there. Jeff, were you there? You were, so maybe you can give us a little bit better take on this. But I was told his opponent left the starting line before him, had a spot, and Kyle's top bulb hung on, and then the rest of the tree didn't even come down.
That's the way I understood it. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I understand the green light did come on. I understand somehow he was about 230-ish on the tree, just let go at some point.
Mm-hmm.
He goes barreling down there after him. He's obviously not getting there. He dumps. The other guy breaks out by 1/1000th of a second. you know, taking, you know, over 210 stripe. So obviously didn't do the best driving job in the world, but he was out of it too. Looked like it was some double breakout conditions. So a lot of guys were online saying, hey, they should have rerun this. You know, I don't know the competitor that he ran. I don't know him at all. But, I mean, was there a discussion, Jeff, that you know of? Did the guy complain, or did they just kind of move on?
You know what? They were doing semifinal contingency when we came around the corner after that round, if I remember correctly. And Kyle wasn't there. He went back to his pits like it was going to be a rerun. And I'd actually asked Dan if they were going to rerun it, and he said he didn't know. And later on, Kyle was parked down from us, and I went down through there to get some water, and they were doing contingency right there. So I'm like, well, I guess they're not going to rerun it. It was kind of a weird deal. I mean, I'm sitting there at the road line looking at the Winston vision. I could see it perfectly, and I'm like, wow, there's no way he's getting there. You know, what happened here? You know, and I seen his light come up, and I'm like, well, that's unusual. But then Charlotte got on the radio and told me what happened. I was like, well, that's going to be a rerun. I thought for sure, but no, they never did. In my mind, anytime there's a tree malfunction like that, to me, there should be a rerun. I don't care.
And I can agree with you on that, Jeff, and I can also agree with it on the other side.
If the numbers add up, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Correct. I mean, you look at that race, and, you know, Kyle was 2-something on the tree to his opponent. You know, if his opponent goes down there and he doesn't break out, I think that race is a rerun.
Yep.
You know, his opponent had every chance to cut him in, you know, especially in this situation, you know, almost 2/10. Did a horrible job down there. That tree being green did not affect him losing, in my opinion, that round.
It didn't.
Poor driving job at the finish line, you know, is what caused that. You know, now on Kyle's side, if he goes out there and he's 5 and the other guy's 5 above and Kyle's, you know, 15 behind, there's no question that has to be rerun. But in that situation where, because, I mean, you look at that, you know, that guy, there was nothing wrong in his lane other than Kyle did not have an opportunity to red light because it was basically an instant green. That's kind of the only thing I see is maybe where he has somewhat of a fight in this situation. Because he can say, well, look, you know, when my tree left, I had a chance to red light because his was basically instant green. You know, he doesn't have that, you know, he doesn't have it odd from the starting line. And maybe he does, you know. Maybe if that tree comes down, he's, you know, 005 red or something. I don't know at that point. But the rerun on that, you know, I don't see – I agree with NHRA in not rerunning that. In that situation, because I don't see
you look at it from the other side too, though. If I don't know what the other guy was on the tree in the other lane, I really don't. But if Rizzoli's even with him on the tree, and Rizzoli's down there riding him, and that guy drops him on his head down there, and Rizzoli breaks out, you know, the other guy wins. You know, he might have just lost track of him and where he was on the racetrack, and felt like he had to hold it to the floor, or, you know, didn't get rid of much, but. I don't want them to get to the point where it's this way we're going to have a rerun, and if it's this way, we're not going to have a rerun. It's just, to me, it's got to be just clear. If there's ever a tree malfunction, we're going to rerun this thing. I mean, I don't want somebody else basically making that decision in the tower when they're 2 hours behind and the pros are going to run.
The problem I have with this whole rerun thing is that it doesn't really depend on what the circumstance is. It depends on who's in the other lane. You know, we've just in the past, you know, there was a deal, you know, Pomona a few years back. There's been a couple other in Florida and Super Gas, you know, where there was some crap on the track. I think at one of these national events in Indy also, they reran, I think it was Labuse. You know, so certain guys had to go up there and –
We had a rerun at the All-Star race, first round. I had a rerun the first round of the All-Stars.
Yep.
Something blew through the lights down there.
Yeah. You know, but I remember, I can't remember if it was Gainesville or Topeka, but there was two pair back-to-back, and the timing system was messed up, and it was in Super Comp or Super Gas, I can't remember, but they re-ran the first pair because it was someone who runs a lot of races and, you know, got some pretty decent money behind them, but the next pair, they didn't rerun, and it was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem I have with this whole rerun deal, and like you said, it probably should go to if there is a malfunction, it's just an automatic rerun no matter what happens. You know, it's like I guess you treat it like it just didn't happen, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right thing to do, you know.
I think I agree with Jeff. I think if there's any sort of malfunction, especially on the tree, it's an automatic rerun. I don't think it matters at all who won or lost, personally. I think where it gets tougher, you know, when Jeff Taylor was on the podcast month or two back, you know, is when you get runs that, you know, on paper they don't look right. That's the stuff that's a little bit more of, okay, can we look at these two time slips and tell if this third run was a little off, you know, how. And if you look at it from an NHRA's perspective, they said, well, you know, we don't know if you didn't dive the brakes and the car took the finish line differently, or we don't know if you made changes to your car, right? There's, if you want to play devil's advocate. But that's the runs that, you know, we all spend a lot of money and time kind of doing this sport. And I know that you two and myself have got several, you always get a run or two a year where you look at the time slip and you're like, that just makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's a lazy photo eye or a timing system issue or something, and you know, I'm not to necessarily always blame the system. You know, I don't, sometimes you just can't explain certain runs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the ones that NHRA really needs to get a good strategy on, because at, you know, historically, they just never did reruns. Like if you went down through there, you know, as long as the tree came down or whatever, you know, it is what it is. But what I've seen this year, especially at the U.S. Nationals, they did several reruns. And some of them looked like they were warranted, some not sure. But then there was others they didn't rerun. So how do you rerun some but not all? It's just a really gray area. And I agree with Jeff. I don't want somebody in the tower making the decision who wins or loses. I'd rather it be a policy in place that it's not necessarily their opinion. It's a, this happens, so we do this.
Yep. And we do it the same every time.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I guess we'll see kind of how it goes. But it was interesting to get your perspective. But just to kind of go back to Kyle, okay, so he wins that round. Maybe he wins it a second time with the rerun. You know, we won't know.
Right.
But did you guys – I know, Jeff, you saw it, but Charlie, did you see the run that he made in the semifinals? You know, four cars left, semifinals. He turns on two more wind lights. He's world champ. He's 14, one above, and gets beat.
Yeah, that was a little tough, man. I mean, we've all been there. We've all had that run. You know, it's just really tough to see it, you know, in the semis of the last race, basically for a world final. I mean,
right. And it looks to me like he was out of it a good 10 mile an hour, 10, 12 mile an hour. You know, he did not get there by 3 thou. So he's given that back 3 thou. Fletcher looked like he cut him loose a little bit too, so we don't know exactly what their plan was. They both might have been trying some sort of spot drop to be dead on. But you know, if I'm in the semifinals of a national event, I got two rounds to win, and somebody tells me, hey, you're going to be 14 and one over, I'd say, yeah, great, sign me up.
Yeah,
I'll take
sign
it.
Me up all year long for that one.
Yeah. So I mean, Superstock came right down to the end. Obviously running Dan Fletcher, one of the best in the business, and he was 006, two above, but to lose by 3 thou at four, down to four cars at the race you had to win, it's a pretty cool story. So,
yeah, it's brutal. I Vic Penrod actually showed up, I think he was in the parking lot, he told me, when they ran that round, and Rizzoli went out. And I was like, man, I was thinking about you yesterday. I was like, your stomach had to be in the knots all day long listening to what was going on over here. He said they drove from Texas over there, and they about turned around two or three times, he said. he just felt like in his mind, you know, Rizzoli was going to win. So,
yeah, and that'd be, you know,
brutal couple days for him.
Yeah, because he's obviously got to be out there for the awards banquet if he wins.
Right.
But yeah, if he drives all the way out there and then loses on Sunday, it's like, well, I guess I'll go home.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough deal.
So yeah, it's interesting, and I think it made up for a pretty exciting end of the year. I don't know Vic. I don't personally know Kyle, but both of them had a heck of a year.
Yeah,
and
they did.
You know, so just give them congrats on that. And I will say real quick, Jeff, and we'll get to your race later, but Kyle's 14 in the semis, Dan's 006, and neither one of them are as good as you. You lay down 000.
Yeah. that was in the bottom of my buy run.
Okay, down to, never mind,
yeah.
Down at round four. Okay,
yeah,
I'm
buy run, yep.
Well, you were 16 there, so you were pretty good there, too.
Yep.
So. All right, we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. But, okay, so the next thing we wanted to quickly talk about is I've been hearing this rumor for since Columbus. I actually talked to David, and it sounded like he was going to hang it up at the end of the year. But David Rampe, 100-plus wins in NHRA, national events, perennial top driver in Superstock, and obviously in Comp Eliminator, got a lot of his wins, but retires after Pomona. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, to me, it's a sad day in our sport. I mean, David Rampe's like, you know, the ultimate gentleman out there. I mean, he's always got a smile on his face. He always takes time to wave at you, you know, no matter how busy he is. Ultimate competitor. But, you know, at this point in his life, it just financially does not make sense for him to keep beating down the highways, you know, and I get it. You know, he's made a living racing for a lot of years, but, you know, financially it just doesn't make sense for him right now. And I get it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. I mean,
it's a shame to lose a guy like that. You know, he's not saying that he won't be back. I mean, he left the door open to drive a car, obviously, but, you know, none of his. You know, he's done running his equipment up and down the road.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I've known Dave since I was a little kid, you know, him and Barry both. I mean, like you said, you know, class act, you know, mm-hmm. always take the time to wave or stop and talk, you know, never heard the guy swear, never heard him, you know, talk bad about anybody or get all fired up about anything. I mean, just, you know, run up and down the highway and, you know, run 12, 15 national events a year and 7-8 points meets. Always, every year, I mean, whether it's comp or super stock, I mean, just, you know, almost a top 10 finisher somewhere. I mean, I don't know how many times he's won the world in comp. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Probably at least 3 or 4 times, I would think. And, you know, he just won it here, 2 years ago, I think? And when it came down to the last race of the year between him and Frank and one other person, I can't remember, out of Division 5 with the pickup, Vincent. They were all battling that year. It's gonna be a tough guy to lose. I mean, he's a real ambassador for sportsman racers. What do you say? He's David Rampe. I mean, 100 and some national event wins. That's pretty impressive. There's only about two guys in that category, and he's one of them.
Right.
So, yeah. No, he'll definitely be missed, and. He definitely got the best of me. I believe the last two times I've run him, I didn't lay down real good runs and got beat. And I was hoping I'd get him back for that, but may not get that opportunity now. But yeah, we'll miss him. He's a great guy and obviously a great champion. I will say this year was his first time in 25 years that he did not win an NHRA national event. I think he got to a couple finals and got close, but. I guess the thing that I found most interesting about that was not that he didn't win this year, but he won at least one national event 25 years in a row. I mean, think about that. Wow.
Crazy numbers.
Like you said, that's a crazy stat. I mean, that's going back to, you know, what was it, 90? What's that go back there? 94?
Come on, Charlie, never do math in front of people.
I never do math. I don't know,
94,
did I get it right or not?
It should be 95, but anyways.
Yeah,
I mean, that's awesome. And just think about that. If I ended my career and had 25 national event wins, I would be, like, over the moon. But this guy's
absolutely.
Got 100, and he won 25 years in a row. So, I mean, that's that's, you know, I'm pretty happy to have one international event win. So it's pretty cool. Couldn't meet a better guy. He obviously has spent the last few years, you know, kind of partnered with the Skillman family out of Indianapolis. And he really taught, you know, Drew how to drive and kind of took him under his wing and was, you know, kind of at the start of their career. And I know worked with him a lot. And, you know, if you had money and had a kid that you wanted somebody to show the ropes of the sport, I can't think of a better guy. And he obviously did a great job. And I'm sure he'll still be out and around a little bit. I'm sure he'll get in the car every once in a while.
I don't think you see the last of him. I think you hit on a good point there. To have a guy like David Rampe in your camp helping somebody along, you know, he can teach him a lot. You know?
Yeah.
Not only how to race, but how to race as a sportsman racer.
Yeah,
you know, and still be good to people.
Yeah, for sure. I heard the rumor that Ray Skillman actually bought the comp car, and he's gonna put it in his museum.
Really?
Yeah, one of the winningest cars in NHRA history. So
absolutely.
Cool. I don't know if you heard that, Charlie, but that's what I heard. And I heard that that David was already gonna be working for a prominent D3 guy next year to help them kind of get a new comp combination together. So I think you'll see him in a car a little bit, you know, probably not his own stuff, probably not near at the level that he's been for 25 years, but I think it'd be hard to keep him away.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
I would agree. We've definitely not seen the last of him, and with his skills and that, you know, he'll be around just in various levels, I would imagine.
Yeah, I also found it interesting. I read an interview that Competition Plus had done, I think it was today, with David Rampe, and he actually said in the interview that Dan Fletcher had lost his peak deal and maybe some pretty big changes in his organization for next year. So it will obviously – I thought it was interesting he said that in the interview. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens there. You know, there's historically been, you know, four or five kind of full-time guys running up and down the road running stock and super stock or variation. And we're getting to the point where there's not as many guys doing that. So
That should be kind of eye-opening to NHRA in a lot of different ways to me.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we talked about that. The last thing I wanted to talk about here before we kind of get into more of you, Jeff, and let's just briefly talk about this, Charlie. We got all winter to talk about this more, but got all the schedules out now since the last time we did the podcast. So we've got the points meet schedules, we got the class schedule out, and we have the national event schedule out. So won't each of us just say kind of one thing that we saw that we thought was interesting with the schedule, and we won't kind of go into detail. We got plenty of time to talk about that over the next few months.
Well, I mean, the double at Columbus, I think, sticks out more than anything. You know, 4 days to run a points meet, alcohol cars, and then stock, super stock class, you know, in a national event. I think you're going to run out of time, personally. I don't see how that is going to get completed by Sunday at 9 o'clock at night if weather is perfect. Maybe I'm wrong, but I see that being, you know, once again, in July. We used to run that race in July when it was, you know, 100 degrees. People didn't like it. They switched it to the fall. It seemed to work better. I do like the idea of the double race. But in our division, man, there's just so many cars between all the sportsman classes. Then you get top guys, your top sportsmen, now alcohol. You're going to have the dual grading point deal in Division III, which is kind of like the Holy Grail. We never get a shot at that. I just see that race being a total cluster. Yeah. That's my two cents.
I can't argue with it. I mean, unless they cut runs dramatically, and may not even have stock, super stock class, I don't know. I hope they don't cut it out. But to me, to add to that is – I believe the 4-day Chicago National event is the week before that. So you're talking back-to-back 4-day races. You know, that's pretty tough on a sportsman racer.
Well, and don't forget you're only getting a week off because you got Norwalk Nationals, you know, in the end of June there.
Right.
So basically two national events and a double, you know, in 21 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, you're talking $1,100 in entry fees if you go to all that, plus fuel and time off work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so that's the other problem.
I've always liked the idea of the doubles, you know, because, you know, where I live seems like my mileage that I have to drive, it, you know, it's pretty good drives. So for me to go to Columbus in one trip and get two races, I like it. But, you know, it almost looks like to me you need 5 days to do it, not four.
And I agree 100% with you on that. Even if you cut out runs, I mean, let's say at the points meet, you only give everybody, you know, let's say two time shots and no cleanup, you know, on Friday to run that, you know, guys just show up, you throw them at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're trying to run a whole race basically from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night.
Yep.
You know, you guys ran into it when it got rained out. I'm not wanting to turn on the lights there the last time for the points meet.
Sure.
You know, when that weather deal got, you know, rained on it for 2 days or 3 days, whatever it was. I don't know. I mean, you see it in Topeka, they get away with it. I don't think they get the car count that we get. I think in Topeka where you get, you know, 90 stockers or 190 super stockers, they don't get the top sportsman, top dragster, and alcohol turnout you do in Division 2. You get in Division 3.
You know, going off on another subject just a little bit, that is our problem in Division 3, is the cars that we have. Top sports and top dragster, the amount of them and the track time that they use. That's what's killing our daily schedule, in my opinion, but
right.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. And to segue off that, I mean, we've gone over this. I know you have, myself, Jeff, you know, trying to get these division directors to go and, you know, give alcohol and top sportsman, top dragster comp, give them two hits on Friday, you know, and one on Saturday and get everybody one round of competition on Saturday on these three-day points meets to get everybody out of there at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock on Sunday night instead of, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Basically, you know, I think we had two points meets that got finished, you know, in a timely manner out of six this year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. I think you're right.
Something's got to change on that aspect of it, especially with the car count we get in Division 3. You know, it seems like a logical fix to, you know, most of us. You know, I don't know, do the alcohol guys, or they cry about having to get, you know, two hits on Friday and one on Saturday instead of one on Friday and two on Saturday. I don't think the top sportsman, top dragster guys care. I mean, most of those guys are there Wednesday night anyway, it seems like.
Right.
So...
I think I'll just add one thing to kind of what you guys, you know, the dialogue you said. I think, you know, Columbus is the one event that kind of stands out on the NHRA schedule for me. I think that could be one of the coolest events of the year if done properly, if done correct. I think one of the biggest problems we've had in Division 3 the last year or so is, yes, we have a lot of cars, but you know you're going to have a lot of cars, right? So just plan for it. And I think many times the schedules just are not set up to allow for it. The schedules are usually pretty, what's the right word? Not aggressive, but they're
tight.
way too optimistic, right?
Exactly. And the
other thing is, I don't love to race at night necessarily, but for some reason in the E3, nobody ever wants to race at night. And I went to a couple big money bracket races this summer. And you know, we raced, you know, 3 days in a row, with, you know, 300 and 400 cars with buybacks and got every race done. And yeah, there were some nights we ran till 12 or 1 a.m. And I'm not saying we need to do that in D3, but I can remember many a nights where, you know, I call my wife who's at home with our son and, you know, it'll be 6 o'clock, 6:30 or something. And she'll say, oh, what have you guys done? And we'll be like, oh, we're done for the day. We're going to dinner. And it's like, well, what do you mean you're done? Like, it's nice out. It's 80 degrees out. It's still light out, and you know they're done racing. So I think that it'd be very interesting to see the Columbus schedule. I think it can be done in 4 days, but not the way they've historically had those schedules. You're going to have to cut some runs out, and I think you're going to have to be aggressive and run you know, if it's dry out and the track's not dewy, you're going to have to run some cars down through there. So, and for me, if they said you can run class, you know, what would they be, Thursday night, or you can not run it? I think most guys would say, let's do it under the lights. It'd be fun. What the heck?
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, I agree to that. I agree to that. You know, the biggest problem at night at Columbus is it always gets dewy. I mean, a lot of them cars don't want to get down. I remember one year, you know, 9 o'clock at night, you know, it's sunset. The dew comes out on that place and, you know, we're banging up comp cars and top dragsters, top sportsmen. That place has always been notorious for that kind of action, you know, once the sun goes down.
Yeah, I mean, I think in July you'd have a better shot. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely can't do that in the fall when they historically had that race. And, you know, I think it was the Indy Points meet this year. I mean, I think we got done the one night at, like, 7. I mean, it was, like, light for a couple hours extra, and there's just, like, nothing going on. So, I don't know. Just something to think about for sure. Okay, let's move on a little bit here, talk to Jeff some more. The last thing I just want to touch on real quick before we get to Jeff is Jeff Taylor, back-to-back finals at Pomona, won this year in the DeFrank family Chevy Camaro FSB, Chevy Camaro. He has definitely dominated out on the West Coast in the last, 2 years, I guess, with that car. Definitely pretty impressive. He's driving that car well. Obviously, you know, Jim Sr. and Jimmy have a great team and a very organized attack. But that was pretty impressive, something that I was kind of following along.
Yeah, absolutely. He's one of the best to ever get behind the wheel one. I mean, there's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff's won, what, 60-some national events now, I think?
Something like that, 50 to 60.
I know it's a lot, man. I mean, he's won in about, you know, the crazy thing is you look at somebody like, you know, Fletcher or David Rampey. I mean, they've done it in, you know, Dave's had some different comp cars, but, you know, JT's done it in like 25 different cars.
He'll jump in anything and win.
Maybe more. He'll jump in anything. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yep.
I mean, you know, from the Taylor and Klein days, you know, to the old 69 Camaro, to these new Copos, to the DeFrank's Cobalt, to the DeFrank's Camaro. I mean, it doesn't matter what Jeff gets in. You know, he's dangerous. I mean, he won the Gators last year with his red car. You know, like you said, he's won the finals twice. I mean, and Jeff ain't no spring chicken. I mean, he's, you know, in his, what's Jeff, his 50s, 60s, somewhere in there?
I would think, yes. I would think 60s, probably early 60s.
And, you know, that's crazy when you look at the amount of guys in our sport that are between 20 and 40 that, you know, have got all these reflexes and this and that and good vision. You know, for a guy like Jeff Taylor to go out there and he's won 5 national events in the last 2-3 years, I mean, that's pretty amazing, you know, in different cars.
Right.
Yeah, and Charlie, that was his 48th win of his career.
Maybe he's been to 65 finals or something.
If you would have, you know, listened to the podcast where I interviewed him, you'd know that. But just joking. But no, we talked in depth about, you know, his kind of goal to get to 50. And you know, about a month after he won the 47th, he wins 48. So I'd say he's got a pretty good shot to get to 50.
I'd say he'll get there.
But, yeah, I mean, we talk about Rampey and Fletcher at 100, which is just unprecedented. You know, I don't know that I've raced a lot. I don't even know if I've gone to 100 national event wins or even gone to another 100 national events, let alone, you know. But to get to 50 would be pretty awesome, too.
What's even crazier about Jeff is I think if you look at his win percentage, I mean, he wins, I think, like 70 or 80% of the final rounds he's in. You know,
that's impressive.
I mean, that is. I mean, you go up there. I mean, if you can be, in my opinion, if you can go up there and get to the final and you can win half of them, you're doing really good.
Right.
I know. I'm definitely not at 50%.
Me neither.
Well, let's okay. Let's jump on to Jeff here. Let's talk a little about your win. This was NHRA National Event win number 2.
Right.
And it looks like you were, you know, obviously super solid throughout eliminations. no worse than 16 all the way into the final, and in the final you were 20. Against Fletcher, it was 001, and you guys, you won in a tight double breakout race. Obviously just a great job driving. This sums up, you know, one of your better years of your career, I would assume. You also had the big win at the Jags All-Star race at Chicago. Also one of the biggest races you can win. And finished, I believe, number 6 in the world. So had to be a great feeling to finish the year like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my goal going out there was try to win enough rounds to at least get in the top 10 this year. And I really thought my best shot of that was the Vegas points race, because I was, you know, what I had to improve on at the Vegas points race, and I really messed that deal up. So I went into Pomona just hoping for the best, you know, but I didn't really look at the points, to be honest with you, going into it. I didn't know what it was going to take to get in the top 10, but it was a good race.
Now how far is that for you to get out there?
My truck said it was a 3,800 mile round trip.
Wow, yeah, so almost 4,000 miles in 3 weeks and 3 races.
Yeah.
That's definitely quite the trip.
Yep, it's quite the trip. But
have you got your truck and trailer washed since you've been back a day now?
No. Actually, I'm emptying in my trailer out. I got it sold, so we're moving on to another one.
Nice.
So what have you ever done that kind of West Coast swing before, or was this the first time you did it?
No, first time I've done it. We've never actually been west of Dallas racing. So, yeah, that was first time out there.
Yeah, it's always kind of been a goal for me and my father. We've talked about doing it for a long time and, kind of on the bucket list. And I know Charlie, you've done it a few times with Brad and company.
Yep.
But, how was it? What kind of made you decide to do it? And
I'm not in the mechanic business anymore. I'm not working at the car dealership. I've started my own business.
Okay.
We're spraying mosquitoes, so obviously in the that time of year, we're not spraying mosquitoes anymore. So, work-wise, it worked out pretty good for me, to go out there and pick up 3 races. It's 3,800 miles, sounds like a lot of miles, but if I go to Charlotte and I go to Rockingham and I go to Dallas, the miles adds up close to the same. Not quite as much, but close. So I thought, I'll just go out there. I've always wanted to go out there and see the country and want to race out there, so. We packed it up and
headed
that way.
Nice, very nice. Now, do you have any travel tribulations or issues?
Let's see. Albuquerque, New Mexico, we were climbing the mountain and it started snowing. So, yeah, that was a little iffy. The roads
Is that going
snowpack.
Or coming home?
Going. Yeah, and I was thinking, what did I get myself into? Yeah, I looked down at the temperature, it said 28 degrees and there's ice hanging off my mirrors, and I'm going up a mountain, and then I just topped it, and the grade said 6% downhill. I'm like, oh, this thing's gonna be good. I mean, the roads, you couldn't see the road; it was snowpack. So we crept down the mountain about 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to go out there for work and different things out on the West Coast, and it's something we definitely don't see here in the Midwest or on the East Coast, where you can be one place and it'd be 75, 80 degrees and then drive an hour and it can be 25 and snowing. It's kind of crazy,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you seen 25 degree temperature swings in the gauge driving out there during the day. It was pretty interesting, really.
Yeah,
cool.
we've been fortunate. The 2 times we went out there, we didn't run into any weather, going through New Mexico up in the mountains. We've been real lucky on that aspect of it.
Yeah. It was fun coming back, but going out there, we hit a little bit for sure.
Nice. Now, you've never been to Vegas, correct? Either.
No.
So, what did you think of Vegas? I mean, because that's a unique points meet. I think it's a 4-day points meet, right?
Yep. A lot of cars. I mean, that track is just phenomenal. It's, if you don't go out there and race, I recommend just going out there and watching. It's so nice out there. It really is nicest track I've been to. By far. Yeah. We really enjoyed it. The Air Force Base is right next to it, so they're out doing maneuvers over the track all week long. So not only do you get to watch race cars, you get to watch fighter jets taking off and doing maneuvers.
Nice, very nice. Now, do you have any time in between the races to hit the strip?
We went downtown one night, went to the casino and had dinner. But really, I enjoyed Hoover Dam more than anything. That's more what I would be into other than gambling. So we spent a day out there. That was really, really something to see that.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty cool. I've had the opportunity to do that. Pretty crazy. They built that, in the 30s, right? So
yeah.
With
5 years, they put it up. Crazy.
Very different technology than they have today. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, cool. Well, do you have plans to do this trip again next year? You're going to go out there for
it's not something I'll do every year. I'll probably do it again, but no time in the near future. It's a pretty expensive trip for sure.
Well, at least you won the last race to help offset that a little bit.
Right.
So what did you think about the competition out there, Jeff? I mean, I noticed, Division III guys went out there. Irvin went out there, did really well. Matt Alvey running up in Superstock at the Vegas race. You won Pomona. I mean, did you think it was as tough as racing in Division III or Division I, or, what would you say there?
Well, I didn't really race too many Division VII guys, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I had, first round of the national event at Vegas, I had Dan Fletcher first round. Can't remember if I had second or third round, to be honest with you. But, it's different racing out there. I think guys race a little different. You have less car count, obviously, than we do. You have a certain percentage of guys you would say, I don't want to race this guy. But, the rest of them, let's race. But it's kind of like Division III. I mean, in the fact that your percentage of people that you have that are good is just bigger. I mean, it's same way in Division I. But our car counts are more,
It's a little more condensed.
It's a little more condensed, yeah, for sure. I mean, when you go out there at the end of the year, you're going to have groups of different division guys racing out there. So I don't know that I would say it was an easy race, I think at Pomona, I had to race McClanahan, Aaron Stanfield and Fletcher, so.
Yeah, none of them are easy by far. I got a kick out of it. Matt's been racing for a long time, and he, makes his first time trip out there, and, he gets to the final, almost wins, but turns it red. Same thing with you. You've won back in Division III at, what was it, 2001-ish?
2000, I think, St. Louis, yep.
Yeah, right around there. It's been, almost two decades.
Mm-hmm.
You guys make your first trip out there, and you bring home some hardware. So it's just kind of, interesting to kind of watch that,
Yeah, so. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's different racing out there. I mean, your group of guys out there is smaller for sure. That are top level guys. The Frank Rizzoli, McClanahan. Those guys, Lamb.
Yeah.
Guys will wear
Jody's
you out
there running all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Now, let me ask you this. I've heard that Vegas can be a little bit of a challenge to dial at, just with the wind and things. Did you find it difficult?
Evidently, we were out there on an odd year because, Jim DeFrank said he came out here on a really good year because you can pull in the water box and have a 10-mile-an-hour tailwind, he says. And by the time you do your burnout stage bar, you got a 10-mile-an-hour tailwind. I don't think it changed one bit the 2 weeks we were out there. I don't think the wind direction changed at all. So we were lucky as far as that goes.
Yeah, I would rate that place like Topeka almost. Jeff, you've raced at Topeka where, you can change 0.2 while you're sitting in the water box. It's very similar to Vegas.
Yep. We didn't run into any of that. The weather was pretty constant when we were there. A little cooler, in fact, at the points race. It warmed up at the National Event a little bit.
Nice.
Come on,
nice.
The same way. The wind blew the same direction every day. 4, 5, 6 mile-an-hour winds, and really didn't affect the car at all.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I personally did have a chance to race. I was out in California for work and just happened to – I actually ran Cam Ferrar's Super Comp car, the guy that just got slapped here last week. But I ran that at the Winter Nationals 1 year, 5 or 6 years ago, kind of last-minute deal, like on a Monday – got an entry type of deal when I was already out there. But I thought Pomona, you know, was a really cool place. You know, I think it's really cool to see the mountains in the background and just an awesome racing atmosphere.
Sure.
But I'll say I was a little disappointed in just the how nice it was. I mean, I thought it was – the pits were pretty run down. The track wasn't really anything special.
Cool place,
but yeah, not as nice as I thought it'd be by any means.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely – the asphalt there was really, really rough in the pit area. Just driving a golf cart through there just beat you up. You know, it wasn't really enjoyable to ride around the pit areas. But, it's old, you know, and I don't know if the fairground, I guess, is owned by the county or the town, I guess. So I don't know how much NHRA is going to spend on, you know, fixing anything out there.
Zero. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, well, cool. That sounds great. Now, I put a post out on Facebook earlier just kind of asking the podcast Facebook group if they had any questions for you. And hilariously, I got the same question like 7 times. And so I got to ask you, you know, but everything was about, you know, how it seems like you guys have one of the cleanest car, race car rig, inside, outside, et cetera. How do you do it, Jeff?
Well, I don't know. Like Charlie said a while ago, we have no kids, so I don't have that to burn up my hours during the day. But I don't know. I've always been like that with my cars. When I was 16 years old, if my car got dust on it, I was washing it. It's just, I don't know, just obsessed with it, I guess.
Well, I think part of it's just, you know, keeping up with it. You know, if you
yeah.
do a little bit every week.
It's maintenance. Yeah, I mean, I try to clean it off after every race underneath and, you know, checking four-link hind joints and shock mounts and all joints, you know, looking at all of it. So,
yeah,
clean car's a happy car, right?
Do you take the car out of the trailer every week between races?
I lost you there, what'd you say?
Yeah, do you take the car out of the trailer every week between races?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Put it up in the air and clean it.
Yeah, we might take ours out in between races if it needs to be.
I mean,
yeah.
Back-to-back races at the end of the year, like the St. Louis points race and national event, sometimes it might stay in there, but I feel really bad when I get to the track and it's still dirty.
And now how often do you wash the trailer?
Every race.
Before you leave, or you stop on the way, or how do you do that?
No, as soon as I get home, I wash it the next day, put it away.
Okay.
What's the secret, Jeff? I mean, what are you using on the truck and the trailer? I mean, soap and water. You have a special, you know. What do you recommend to all of us out here that are trying to learn the Jeff Stoner way? Man,
he has
converted me. I mean, I will polish my wheels in the wintertime, and I'll send Jeff pictures, you know, to make sure that, you know, I'm doing it right. You know, I know you like the billet polish, you know, from Mother's.
Oh, yes,
I learned that
yeah.
through you. You know, that's,
yep,
if you can find that, you know, that's Jeff recommended.
I think the first time I seen you run Superstock 1 year was at Norwalk. And I see you pulling it back to the staging lanes, and I said, you're going to take that back to the pits because we don't roll like that at Superstock. You're going to have to take
yeah,
that back
we,
and clean it up.
Dude, we had just pulled the car and sat in the corner all winter long, and I literally pulled it out, put it in the trailer because we were trying to farm, and I think we showed up Saturday morning. I went over to see Mickey Thompson, put 4 new tires on it because they sat, you know, flat all winter, put a new battery in it, and there was probably, 10 or 12, you know, bird shit droppings from being in the corner of the barn.
And he comes
over, looks at me, and he looks inside the car, and there's dust everywhere. I mean, I think you can actually see where a mouse ran across the dash. And he looks at me, and he's, like, just in shock, like, dude. And I'm like, man, we've been working, you know, 12 hours, you know, I shouldn't even be here, you know. And he's like, are you going to clean that? I'm like, well, maybe. So then he shamed me, and then he saw me in the pits, you know, vacuuming it out. You know, he finally shamed me into doing it.
Oh, yeah. I think you spent 2 or 3 hours over there that afternoon cleaning it.
I did. I think you and Decker watched me on a golf cart to make sure it was approved.
I'm pretty sure we did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and Decker and Nick Morris, you're – I think are 3 of the guys that come to mind in Division 3. You guys are all good friends, park together a lot, and all have immaculate cars and trailers. So
Appreciate
You're definitely at the end of that spectrum. I would say, Charlie, you are dead at the other end of that. So,
yeah, I'm honest about it. You know, it's not for a lack of wanting to have clean stuff. It's just for lack of time. You know,
well, lack of time. I will say,
Charlie and Bob, when I was going to college in Michigan, we left our trailer at Charlie's farm, you know, on and off for a couple of years, and left cars in their one of their two barns. And it is a pretty dirty atmosphere, just with tractors running in and out, dust and dirt roads. And so you get some of that honest. I don't think you could keep your stuff like Jeff if you wanted to. But yeah, you got to ask that question.
You know.
And then I think, you know, getting the car out of the trailer every week and doing some maintenance and cleaning and checking stuff, I think that is obviously a great idea as well. I remember a couple years ago, I got to tell a quick story. I was talking to FJ Smith, and I ordered had some suspension questions on my Cavalier. And he was helping me in answering the questions, and he said, you know, asked how I stored the car between races. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, if there's nothing wrong with it, it's strapped down in the trailer. And he just thought that was the craziest thing. I mean, he said, well, they take his car, they put on Projax, let it hang. And you know, he said, well, I don't know how to tell you how long your springs are going to last if you do that. You know, it was just pretty funny because it's like, well, I know that's what I should do, but I just don't have time for that. So I just thought it was funny.
We've got a tough schedule in Division III, so you lose a lot of energy. You know, by the end of the summer of taking care of stuff, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think for me personally, it'd be a little bit better going forward. My wife, my son, we moved a lot closer to my father and where we keep the race cars. So we're you know, historically before August, I was about an hour and a half away. So it made it hard to kind of do that, you know, every night thing. And for him to work and then try to do that with three cars by himself was darn near impossible. So hopefully together we can do a little bit better job.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, it's good to get the cleaning tips, and stay on it. What'd you say? Billet polish, Charlie, right?
Billet polish.
Yep, billet polish, man, for them wheels.
And clean your trailer and truck as soon as you get home so that you're good for the next week, and then obviously you keep it inside. That probably doesn't hurt either.
Use the California Golden Shine for your soap and your wax and all that.
Okay, California Golden Shine.
How do you feel about the Blue Beacon?
Oh, you must have heard the story then, didn't you?
No, I haven't. I'm all ears.
So you're talking about the truck wash, right?
Yeah.
So our stuff, we're going out to Vegas, and our stuff gets snowed on. So I met up with Stanfield and his party at Tucum Carry, and then we drove the rest of the way in together. And everybody's rig got dirty. Greg's, Bobby Brannon's, and Greg's other little truck and trailer. Well, we pull off this intersection on this highway, and they pull in this Blue Beacon thing, and I'm trapped. I didn't know where they were going, and I'm stuck. I can't get out. I'm like, I ain't going through that. I ain't taking my stuff through there. So I pull up there, and I said, man, I don't want this thing washed. He said, why are you in line? I said, well, I'm following these guys. And I'm like, I don't want that stuff in my truck. And he kind of looked at me funny, and he said, just pull through and park out there. He wasn't very happy with me, but. No, I wasn't leaving half my paint there running on the floor. Was not happening. I called Jimmy DeFrank, and he had a guy there in Vegas that detailed trucks and trailers. And I take a lot of pride in washing my stuff, but I don't know that it's ever looked that good. He did a heck of a job.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Hey. $90. Truck, trailer, arm roll, everything, no water spots anywhere. It's perfect.
Oh, man, it looks like I'm bringing my stuff to Vegas next year.
Dude, this guy was on it.
For you, Charlie, it might be a little bit more than the $90.
Yeah, I'd pay $200 to have that thing clean, no problem.
Did you? Okay, Jeff, so we talked about the truck and trailer. You said you're getting the new rig for next year, so we're doing similar truck and trailer living quarters deal, or are you changing it up?
Same truck, just getting a different trailer. Downsizing a little bit. That trailer, you know, it's 50 foot long. I'm tired of dragging it around. So we're downsizing just a little bit. Getting an aluminum trailer, so it's a little lighter.
Nice.
Are you downsizing to a smaller rig so Charlotte can start to drive? Or?
Yeah, I wish. I asked her if she wanted to help drive back from Vegas. She said, I'll just sit over there and cry. So, well, I guess I'll drive.
Nice, nice. Now, any big schedule changes for next year? Are you kind of going to hit the same D3?
No, I'll hit the same D3 races. I'm trying to figure out where I want to go early in the year to try to get maybe two out-of-division races and one national event. And kind of looking at Houston, maybe national, and then they have the double in Dallas, I think, 2 weeks later or a week later. I might do that.
Yeah, something about that.
Those double out-of-division points races are nice. I went to it last year, and I ran the first one, and the second one they're calling for tornadoes, so they say I didn't stay.
Wow.
They ran it on Monday, so I'm glad I left.
Nice, very nice. Now, look at my notes here. We did get one other question for you, some of our listeners here. But, Charlie and I obviously grew up kind of around the sport. My dad raced, Charlie's dad raced. It seems like that's a pretty common way to kind of get into the sport. You know, your neighbor raced, or you went with him, or your uncle, or your grandpa, or your dad. You know, but I think from what I understand, you really don't have any family members that did kind of race stock, super stock. How did you get into all this?
Well, you know, from a young age, and Charlie could probably attest to this, growing around my grandpa's farm, anything that had an engine on it, you wanted to drive it. I don't care what it was, whether it was a lawnmower or a tractor or the truck. So at a young age, anything that was powered, I wanted to drive it. So, you know, when I turned 16, got a car, and I grew up in a small little town, and kind of, I don't know, you didn't hear much about drag race. You didn't know much about it. But what always caught my eye was factory muscle cars. Anything that was completely original, I loved it, you know. And then when I moved to Cape here, I had a little Red Express truck, you know, it was kind of a factory muscle truck, whatever. And I started running around with Wade Owens, and I was bracket racing too at the time. I had a Dodge Duster, and just only bracket raced about a year and a half, and he was starting to run super stock, and I'm like, man, this is cool. This is factory muscle cars and it's drag racing. And I went with him to Topeka, and I think 93 or 94, I can't remember. And I was just hooked. I mean, I loved it. I mean, seeing the factory muscle cars running super stock and stock eliminator, and then ended up coming home, and I think maybe 6 months later I bought that car from him and just started running. I jumped in neck deep. I mean, I didn't have a clue, you know, and I got myself wore out a lot. I think the first race I went to in Memphis, I raced Greg Stanfield first round. I'm 003 on him, blind or breakout. He was carrying the big one on his window that year. So I jumped in deep and got my clock cleaned a lot. But I learned a lot, you know, over the years. So, but, yeah, I mean, really nobody in my family ever drag raced. Charlotte and I just did it on our own.
That's really cool. I knew you and Wade over at Titan. Now
you
guys have a business together, correct, Jeff?
It's his business. You know, I go out there and, you know, I have my mosquito spraying business, but you know, like when I'm in between jobs or in the wintertime, obviously, I go out there and I help him with that. And I enjoy it. You know, it's always something different. Beats working at the car dealership, that's for sure.
Yeah. What's the name of that business for everybody listening?
Customs and Classics.
Okay.
Yep.
You guys do pretty much everything from painting to pull off frame off there, correct?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
How did you get into the mosquito spraying business? I mean, that's a pretty big step from a dealership.
Well, I was sitting there just sick and tired at the dealership one day, and it was lunch, and I'm back here on the internet. One of the I don't know if it's on Yahoo or whatever, and it came up like the 10 or 20 fastest growing businesses going on right now. I'm like, I'm going to click on this, I'm going to learn something. Well, that came up, mosquito spraying business, got to reading about it. I'm like, that's kind of interesting. I might want to do this. So I found out some information about it and just started doing it. You know, it's pretty big up around the Great Lakes, you know, in Michigan, with all the water they have up there, but it's really growing down here too, so. Because we have a lot of mosquitoes in Missouri.
Yeah, it's growing everywhere, especially, you know, we get wetter and wetter springs.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, it gets me out, you know, working outdoors, and like I said, I'm enjoying it.
Nice. How long have you been doing that?
30 years. 30 years in the car dealership was a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
Damn. When did you start at the car? How old were you start at the car dealership, Jeff?
I was 19. Yep.
19.
19 years old. So, long time.
Yeah, long time. So now, you've only had basically, what, two race cars your whole career?
Yeah, I had the 69 Camaro. Yeah, I had the black 69 Camaro, and kind of seen the writing on the wall with fuel injection and old cars versus new cars, and I'm like, I'm going to do something different here. So we bought that car from Roger Keeling. That was Roger Keeling's car that I have now. And,
yep.
Put it back to fuel injection and enjoyed it ever since. I miss the old black one, though.
It's down floating around in Texas right now. It's probably not near as clean as when you had it, I'm guessing.
It still looks pretty good. I've seen it in Dallas this spring, and it still looks good.
Yeah. Those guys got guys for cleaning, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, all their stuff looks good. I'm pimping them a little bit.
I know you are.
So, no, that's about all I got, Aaron. You got anything else, man, to add? Anything we missed or... You know,
Jeff. So we're doing the same thing next year with a new trailer, slightly shorter, similar schedule. I guess you know, if you can have a year as successful as this year, next year, I think you'd be pretty happy. So
I'd be really happy. Be blessed. Absolutely.
Yep. No,
it's
a
cruel
great
sport.
Year. I mean, it is. You can go, you know, 10 years and not win anything, and then have a year like you've had this year, national event, all star race. You know, top 10 finish. I mean, how many? You've won the division, what, 2-3 times now?
No, just once. I finished second a couple times and third a couple times. It's just hard to put a whole year together.
You're not telling me anything.
It's difficult. You can start out the year pretty good and then just, you know, have them 2 or 3, maybe 4 races in the middle of the year that just, you know, frustrate you and you know, it's hard to get your wits about you and to get back to the next race and, you know, get going again.
Yeah, it's funny. Aaron and I were talking about this the other day. You know, when we did our kind of mid-season review, you know, we had, you know, 4 or 5 guys for super stock and 4 or 5 guys for stock who we thought were basically, you know, shoe-ins, you know, to finish 1, 2, 3 at that point in time. And, you know, now we look at it and it wasn't even, I mean, those guys all finished top 10, but I mean, it really, it's just crazy how, you know, you can start off so hot and then go cold or, to start off cold and then get hot at the end.
Right.
It's really tough to put together, you know, basically, you know, 10 to 9 months worth of racing together.
It is. It takes a lot of focus. And, you know, when you look at the guys that finish up there in the top 10, you know, every year, and you're just like, man, that's impressive, you know, to do that. I mean, it's just to maintain that much focus all year long and make all those races, you know.
Yep.
Beating up down the highways is hard on a guy.
Yeah, it is. It's hard.
And your body.
It's hard just to have your race car and your tow vehicle and everything running at the end of the year sometimes, you know? So
it is. Absolutely.
Let alone winning rounds, so. It is definitely a tough sport, and that's why we like it, right? So.
Yep.
If it was easy, everybody would do it. Never heard that one before.
Yeah, we all enjoy it, I think, at the end of the day.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, people talk about how great bracket racing is, but it really doesn't. You know, I did it for a year and a half, and you went down there and you seen the same people, the same cars, doing the same thing on the same track, and it just got to where it wasn't enjoyable anymore. And, you know, I've been doing this since 95 or 6, and, you know, I still can't wait to go to the next race.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree, and I think, you know, is bracket racing tough? Yeah, it's got its own challenges. It's hard to be good the same place, you know, a local track every weekend, run the same. You know, that's tough too.
But it's real tough.
But it's very different. You know, I always, you know, a lot of bracket racers or local, you know, track guys, they'll look at the national drag racers and look sometimes at lights and stand stuff, and they'll say,
oh, you know, Stockland there is easy, and I could do that. Mm-hmm. I'd say, okay, yeah, it's real easy to go to one track that you've been to all year 20 times and have good lights all night. It's hard to go to 15 different tracks over 3 and 4 days and lay down those kind of lights. So, you know, it's interesting. I never look down. I try not to ever look down upon any other sport or any other class in the sport, because they're all hard. Nothing's easy. You know, whether that's super comp or bracket racing or whatever. I mean, everything's hard, and it's got its own challenges. And it's, you know, if it wasn't challenging, it wouldn't be any fun, right? So,
I get a lot of enjoyment out of it, that's for sure.
Cool. Well, you should definitely have a good winter, because I think when you I won the world finals in IHRA 1 year, and it's a pretty good feeling when you end the year with a win. You get to think about that all winter. So
this is going to be about the shortest turnaround I've ever had for racing. I mean, usually we're done around here, you know, middle of October or early October, and, you know, here it is almost Thanksgiving, and I didn't even knock the rubber off my wheelie bars yet, so I'm a little behind.
Oh, don't lie to me. Them things are slick. They're clean.
No, it's dirty. I promise you. It's on the lift, but it's dirty.
But to be fair, here in Ohio, where it has snowed already, we just took my dad's car out of the trailer Sunday.
Yeah.
So
I'm not too far behind, man.
No, you're okay. No. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Jeff. Great job year, especially a great job out in the Western Swing. And, you know, like Charlie said, all the D3 guys did well up there. So
Yeah, we had a good showing in Division 3 this year, actually in the top 10. You know, I think there were 3 of us that made the top 10 this year. And that's,
you, Irvin, and
you
me.
Know,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we in D3 here beat up on each other, you know, race to race, you know, it's hard to gain points in Division 3 because of the talent that's in Division 3. You know, it's hard to get in the top 10. You know, so I think Division 3 had a good showing this year, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, congrats. Good luck this winter. Definitely tell your wife we said hi.
Yeah, have a great season.
I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
That concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.